This coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Naso in Chutz Laaretz. Torah tells us that after the beginning of the Parsha, which picks off where we had left off, the Torah begins with a new section by telling us, Ish o isha ki yasu mikochato sa'adam limomal ba'ashem, that when a man or a woman should do one of the sins of Hashem, and Rashi explains that the phrase limomal, which also appears in Chumash in Parshas Vayikra, in Perek Chafei Pasuk Chaf, is repeated over here to teach us two lessons. The first is the idea of vidui as a requirement for atonement, and the second is the direction as to what one should do when he or she steals from a ger. And that is the idea that one has to pay restitution to a kohen, assuming the ger has no heirs. Rabbi Simon Shalita, one of the Rashi Yeshiva, why you would often quote the Sfas Emes, who explains that the reason for the mention of vidui by the issue of stealing from a ger is the fact that whenever we sin, we're somehow involved in stealing from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is to say, by being aware that we're off the path He sets for us, we're inclined to take that more seriously. When it comes to Gezel HaGer, although ultimately there's nobody who has to be paid back because the ger has no heirs and he has passed on, notwithstanding, there's a need to pay back too, because as far as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is concerned, He has a responsibility. And so therefore, the idea is brought to the Kohen, who serves as the representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order to collect. Rabbi Simon would often add to us that this is in addition to the understanding that when you steal from someone, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, there's just a natural Bein Adam L'Chaveiro responsibility to pay that person back. The middle of the Parsha, the Torah introduces the idea of the Sota, where the Torah tells us that her husband has to bring a karban on her behalf, a tenth of an epha of barley flour, lo yitzok alav shemen, v'lo yitain alav levona, that it shall not have oil or levona on it. And Rashi explains that it shouldn't have oil because we don't want her to have her carbon to be mehudar, to be considered special, but rather he asta machal behema, she did an action that was an action, a masa behema, so therefore her food is kemachal behema. It's more animalistic. She's also told no levona, because that's descriptive of the imahos, who are likened to levona. So the Gioni Amusar is fascinated by the fact that at the same moment that we're comparing the woman's actions to animals, we're also sitting there and contrasting her with the imahos. Why the two in the same moment? And so the Gioni Amusar explains that often a person assumes that if he or she is on a low plane, then she or he will not be expected to meet higher levels normally expected of them. Not so, says the Torah. In most instances, we need to ask someone why he or she is not only acting animalistically, but also why they don't rise up to the occasion of that which is expected of the daughter of the imahos. It's a two-step process, and both pieces need to be met. The Torah also then teaches us the story of the Nazir. And in context of teaching us about a Nazir, the Gemara in Sota points out that there is a juxtaposition as to why these two subjects, Sota and Nazir, are right next to each other. And the Torah tells us, the Gemara tells us, Ka'aroa Sota Bekil Kula, if a person sees the Sota and her defilement, Yazir Aso Menayayim, he'll hold himself back from wine. Now why does the Torah assume that the average person would assume that the degradation of an outside woman, the Sota, would be related to his or her own drinking habits? So Rav Olbi Zatzal explained that the call here is for a person to recognize that we need to take precautions, because the trouble that befalls others can also affect us too. So we therefore must ask ourselves to think about what brings people to sin, and instead of chatting about them and their problem, we need to personalize it for ourselves and see to it that we halt the same process in ourselves and nip it in the bud, so to speak, before things progress too fast. And unfortunately, we'll be on a runaway train. After the story of the Nesiim and the Birkas Kohanim, the bulk of the Parsha deals with the Karbanos of the Nesiim, the offers of the Nesiim. I want to offer a couple of thoughts in that regard. The first one is the fact that we find Agalal Shnei Nesiim, that a wagon was brought for the two Nesiim. So Moshe Tzvi Neria Zecher Tzadok Livracha, the Rav of Kfar Aroer, noted the amazing nature of this donation. Says Rav Neria, Normally, 2 leaders are uncomfortable riding in the same wagon. It would take away from them. However, when we deal with Nesiei Yisrael, who see the wagon as belonging to Am Yisrael, and their status also being a gift from the people to be used for the people, then says Rav Neria, it's impossible not to be able to share a wagon. I think there's a critical lesson in that. Very often, we talk about how Ein Shtei Nesim Yecholim Limloch B'Meluch Achas, or L'Shtamish B'Keser Achas, that 2 kings don't have the ability to go ahead and wear the same crown. When it comes to Am Yisrael, that's not supposed to be the challenge, because there's a crown that exists for each and every member of Am Yisrael. Assuming, of course, that they realize that ultimately that crown comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is one of the lessons the Nesiim brought forth. Then we find that in each one of the Nesiim's Karbanos, beginning with Nachshon ben Aminadav, we see that they brought a... Shemen, Belulav HaShemen V'Nisko, that there was Solas Belulav HaShemen. They brought flour mixed with oil for a Limincha, for a Karban Mincha. And Rav Pam would point out that there's a Medrash in the Yalkut Shemoni that explains that Solas is compared to Torah. And Yalkut Shemoni adds that that has to be mixed with Belulav HaShemen, Shemen of course being indicative of Masim Tovim. Shemen alone does not have, olive oil does not have an exciting use on its own. It's what it does when it gets involved with everything else. When it's deep fried, when it's brought into, taste is infused into it, that makes it more exciting. And the same is true, it becomes indicative of Masim Tovim. And in the same way that flour is combined with oil to make it fit for consumption, says the late great Rav Pam Zatzal, so too must one's Torah study be combined with good deeds and proper behavior. Because Torah knowledge without midos has very little value. Rav Pam Zatzal added that the title Ben Torah is therefore not limited to the person who sits in yeshiva every minute of the day, nor is it a guarantee that one who does sit in yeshiva every minute of the day earns the title Ben Torah. Rather, explains Rav Pam, it's the person who makes every opportunity to be one of being a Ben Torah by reflecting the midos of the Torah that gets to one to earn the coveted title. Says Rav Pam, by the way, it's no surprise that the elating of this parsha surrounds Matan Torah because it reflects whatever the true key for Kabbalah Satorah is, and that is to be a Ben Torah. While we're on the subject of the Karbanos HaNesiim, the simple understanding of this section of the Torah is that it was a harasha, it was just for that time period. And accordingly, it would not be in the Minyan HaMitzvos. However, the Ramban argues that in principle it's a mitzvah for future generations, in that when you dedicate the Beis HaMikdash, you need to make extended celebrations. Simori Barabi Rav Shechter Shalita explained that this is the basis of the concept of Megillas Tainis. In fact, the fact that the Chashmonaim were victorious in battle was a kiyum of preserving the Beis HaMikdash, and each time they did so, they celebrated the success. Rav Shechter would tell us that the Nesivis and the Svas Emes explain that this is why they established Purim, and that they thought it would lead to building the Geula. Aschalta de Geula means if it looks like it will lead to Geula, it's a kiyum of the Yom Tov of building a Beis HaMikdash. The idea of having Karbanos HaNesiim, explains Rav Shechter, is also part of that understanding, that when we record it, it reminds us that even the small things that are on par and on point towards leading to larger things, those things too are included in the responsibility of Chanukah HaMizbeach. Byom Hasheni Hekriv Nisanel Ben Tzuar Nesiyas Achar Hekrivas Karbano. And the only time we find the Hekriv twice is in regard to that Karban on the second day offered by Nisanel Ben Tzuar. Rishmul in Brazil asked the question, why is it? There's a redundancy somewhat in repeating Hekriv. Brazil explains that Nisanel, as one who brought the second Karban, had the opportunity to set a pattern of deviation and creativity. And so by doing so, he would have demonstrated that it's the external that makes a difference. And instead, he chose to bring the exact same karban, which contained very different karbanos. Take a look at the Ramban and the Medrash. But, says Rabbi Brazil, Externally, he demonstrated a consistent pattern in the carbon's offering. And in doing so, he offered a second carbon. He sacrificed his external individuality in exchange for a lesson in external uniformity to the service of Hashem. This, in our lives, is a crucial message. Sometimes we want to find our own way. We have to have our own style minion. We have to have our own type of leadership. And those things aren't always the best things for the Jewish people. Nisanel ben Suar teaches us that it wasn't a necessity. He was true to his name, Nisanel ben Suar. He gave a gift to Hashem of his soul, despite the tzar to his ego. And that was, at first he was Hikriv, and then he was Makriv his carbon, which was exactly the same. Finally, in the context of the Haftorah, we find another critical message. In the Haftorah, we read about the wife of Manoach, who's known as Hatzalfuni, Manoach, and learning about the potential birth of the individual who would be Shimshon HaGibor, who would be a Nazir Elokim in Abeten. He would be a Nazir from the beginning. Now, why was it that the Malach appears to Hatzalfuni, and he tells her, Hinach HaRav Yaladis Bein, behold, you are an Akara and you haven't had a child. You will become pregnant and you will have the ability to have a child. And the question has to be raised. Why did the fact that she was barren become so significant to the mission of the Malach? So the Medrash notes, and this is a crucial comment of the Medrash, that there was a long-standing argument between Manoach and his wife about who was responsible for their fertility difficulty. Each one blamed the other. But Binyamin Eisenberger Shlita explains that when people are depressed, they tend to look to extend the blame to get out of their frustration. And this is often the reason for problems in Shalom Bayis in general. However, in this case, in order for the miracle to happen, there needed to be a vessel to hold the bracha, and that vessel was Shalom. And thus the Malach told the woman that it was she who was barren, in order to end the argument once and for all. However, he told her, and not Manoach, so as not to have him hold it over her and tell her, I told you so. Sometimes it's important to quell a machlokas and see the end of the machlokas, but even finding the way to end the machlokas should be done in such a way to preserve the ultimate aspect, and that is the aspect of Shalom. After all, as we say, Hashem owes Liamo Yitain, Hashem Yivarech Esamo Vashalom, a Shabbat Shalom to you all.